Mr. Jeffrey, hopefully. And so I think we should begin. Just a few one or two matters which are not directly dealing with the matter before us. The House Chairperson, Mr. Frolic, honourable members, has given us a deadline for finalisation of the State Liability Bill, and that deadline is 20 June this year. You'll recall that the Constitutional Court set a deadline, and so Mr. Frolic has then worked back from that deadline and incorporated the NCLP process and provided us with this deadline of 20 June. I am expected to respond to him sometime today as to whether we can, whether this is feasible. In other words, you know, will we finish by 20 June? That's the point I'm bringing to your attention. So that's the first thing. The second thing which I'm just asking you to flag, it also comes from Mr. Frolic. It pertains to the remuneration in terms of conditions and benefits for the Deputy Public Protector. Members will recall that the Public Protector's Office has a CEO who earns more than the Deputy Public Protector, which is an anomalous situation, and according to Mr. Frolic, this matter had been referred to us 26 July last year, and we haven't resolved it. So we will need to do that as well in an informal discussion with Mr. Sibanyoni. We thought that we should ask the Public Protector's Office to come to the committee, present us with a structure of the office, and if they could give us possible recommendations for the salary or remuneration in terms of conditions of the deputy. So that those are the two issues Mr. Frolic has asked us to be mindful of. Do committee members feel we can make 20 June comfortably? Yes, state liability. We should. Well, you see, we have the budget process. That's like a major undertaking. But I think we can fit it in. We must prioritize it. Fortunately, protection of personal information is being dealt with by our subcommittee. And the other piece of legislation that is priority for us is trafficking. But notwithstanding that, and notwithstanding the local government elections, I don't want to say as chair, yes we can. I'm tempted to say yes we can, but then later on you're going to say, well, you said we can. Yes. Yeah, all right. But I'm putting it to you. Should I respond in the affirmative to Mr. Frolic and say, yes, we can make 20 June? Okay. All right. All right. Mr. Radman, Mr. Labuskagne, welcome. What we thought Mr. Labuskagne would do for us this morning is take us through all the submissions which is contained in a summary document which all of you should have. We've really put pressure on Mr. Labuskagne because he's had to do this at very short notice. But
thank you, Chair. After the bill was introduced into Parliament, it was published for comment, as is the normal practice. Now, we have received comment, and let me say immediately, Chair, that to my mind, the comments that we have received are extremely helpful. They are really very relevant, and it will have to be considered by us, and we will have to advise you, and you will have to debate these issues as well. As you indicated, we received the comments on late on Friday and on Monday, and we drafted a document indicating to you what these comments are, summarizing the comments. We at this stage will not be able to give you any responses really to the issues that have been raised. We have referred the comments to the National Treasury because there are a number of suggestions which relate to their responsibility, and we will have to discuss it with them. We've also made it available to our state law advisors, and we will have to sit down with them as well. But as I said, there are a number of important issues that have been raised that we will have to consider. Yes, Chair, with your permission, I will ask you on then to go through this document for you. It has been made available. The committee also raised a number of issues at the last meeting when we briefed the committee, and Yuan will endeavour to touch on some of those issues as well after going through this document. Not all the issues, because some of them still require some further investigation and discussions. But Yuan will take you through, Chair. Thank you. You will notice that he looks much better than he did last time when we were in the committee. We took him to a doctor, and he had very high blood pressure and kicking and screaming. Yeah. Thank you.
I've been doing it since 1996, so I. Chairperson, sorry, I just before I start, just want to confirm the date of the 20th of June. That is for this committee to finalise the bill, not for the House. Well, I'm asking because then it also gives me some kind of indication how long I have to investigate and draft, because we will definitely have to draft amendments emanating from the comments. Chairperson, as Mr. Rudman mentioned, I will at the end refer to some of the issues raised by the committee previously. Many of those issues have also been raised by some of the commentators, so which are then already sort of covered in the summary of submission. But I will then, on the outstanding ones, I will give a short feedback on what I have managed to determine up to now. Okay, if we then go to the document, to the summary. I hope my summary is in line with the numbers of the document or the comments as they have been numbered by the committee secretary. It appears to be the case. We'll then start with the general counsel of the bar. Indicates that it supports the bill except for two issues that it raises. Number one, the view is that by restricting the execution against property, they indicate undermines the values of the Constitution, and therefore the Council expresses a concern about the constitutionality of that provision, number one. Secondly, it's pointed out that restriction also discriminates against citizens unless they can also execute against immovable property. Now there are also some other commentators who propose that immovable property should also be, or there should be a provision that immovable property may be attached and executed, but the committee will see as I go along. We'll get to that, Ms. Smuts, when we give feedback. Okay, that is as far as the Bar Council is concerned. Then the nice rights attorneys, they basically propose technical changes. For example, that in the proposed clause 3 sub 4, that the words apply will be substituted with the word issue, to be in line with the rules of the High Court and Magistrates Courts. I have made copies of those rules. I don't think I've made them available. I briefly glanced through those rules, and the word issue is used, but I don't think in the same sense as here. But once the department comes back to the committee with our responses on all these proposals, then I will give the committee a hopefully a satisfactory answer as far as that is concerned. And then they also proposed that in the proposed subsection 7, right at the end, that the words "and the court may grant such stay on terms that promote such interests" be added. Now, I don't know exactly what the effect thereof will be, but we will definitely consider that issue. Standard Bank, in my view, has provided some useful comments. Again, they point out that the bill only allows for movable assets to be attached, and there appears to be no justifiable reason why that restriction is provided for, especially since movable assets may be insufficient to cover the amount due and payable to satisfy the judgment debt. They then further indicates, of Sandbank further indicates, that the bill already contains certain protection as far as movable assets are concerned, and if provision is made that immovable assets may also be attached and executed, the same protection will then apply in respect of those assets. Lastly, as far as that issue is concerned, Standard Bank proposes as an alternative that if the state prefers that movable assets be sold and attached rather than immovable assets, the bill should provide that the litigant first, I don't know how you pronounce that word, excuse movable assets, and in the event of a shortfall, then the litigant must be allowed to attach immovable assets. So it's again the issue of should we include immovable, yes or no. Standard Bank further points out that the bill only allows for the attachment of assets used by the department concerned. They then indicate that departments are not separate legal entities, and that the debt is actually owned by the state. Therefore, if the state fails to perform, the litigant must be allowed not to only attach the assets of the department concerned, but of any other department which is part of the state. That's okay. Then we go to page 3. on top proposes that if the department or the litigant must be allowed for the excavation of assets owned by the state and used by the department firstly, and if the proceeds are insufficient, then the litigant must be allowed to settle the claim by allowing other state assets to be attached. So again, it's different departments. Then there's a technical change, which I'm not going to deal with. An important recommendation, which I haven't quite my mind to yet, is that as far as paragraph of subsection 5 is concerned, it means that the subsection should allow for the removal and sale of the property with the proceeds kept in trust if the nature of the assets so requires, or where the value of the assets may diminish, or if it is not removed and or sold. I think what they have in mind here, I don't think they gave an example, but for example, if food is attached. I mean, you can't for that 30-day period, which the sheriff has to wait. Can't then something will have to happen with the food. So I think what they suggest is sell the food, but keep the income here until that 30-day period has expired. And if the state then has not applied for the stay of execution. Although I think in that case, maybe we will have to think if we're going to follow that route, whether that then we'll definitely have to think of amendments to sub 7, which provides that the state may apply for a stay of execution. But again, that's something that the committee will, I'm sure, discuss at the later stage. The Department of the Premier Western Cape also useful comments. Points out that the fact that in subsection 1 that we substitute the word may with shall now means that government departments will have to comply with the court orders. Previously, like, I think the reason for may with the substitution of may with shall is the fact that we have sort of redrafted the whole sub 1. It's not a matter that they previously had a discretion, that we now make it place an obligation on them. So that's only technical. As far as sub clause 3A is concerned, points out that there's a distinction is made between an appeal against a judgment and an appeal against an order. Whilst no such distinction is made in paragraph B of the definition of final court order. So again, that's something that we will have to, it appears to be technical, but we will have to look into that matter. Top of page 4. Again, technical proposes that there should be consistency between the provisions of the provision between sub clause 3A and the word appeal as used in the definition of final court order, and so that the two must be given the same meaning. They propose that the 30-day period must start running from the time when the executive authority and the accounting officer is notified of the final court order. At the moment, the bill provides within 30 days after date of judgment. Then the state attorney has 7 days to notify. But as the bill reads at the moment, that 30 days starts running even before the department has been notified of the case. You will see further on, Chairperson, there's one commentator proposed that we should provide for a situation where no notification is given. So again, this whole issue of notification has also drawn some comments. As far as subsection 3B is concerned, indicates it's not clear what the term appropriation account means, seeing that it has not been defined. points out that in terms of section 21 of the PFMA, money may only be drawn from a provincial revenue fund in terms of the appropriation legislation or as a direct charge if it is provided for in the constitution. Now they then go on to indicate, and seeing that this comes from a province, I think that maybe that this might be problems that they foresee, but this is issue that National or the Department of Finance will have to advise us on. That's why we have also submitted all the comments to Finance for their inputs. I'm not going to go in all the detail that they indicate, except for basically that they say that if legislation needs to be passed to provide for the payment of the money, the accounting officer has no control over the passing of legislation, and therefore it will be difficult to comply with the 30-day timeline as provided for in the bill. Page 5, Roman E, as far as subclause 4 is concerned, indicates that the words acceptable arrangements imply that it would be possible for the state to enter into an agreement with the creditor to liquidate the judgment debt. It expresses the view that if this is the intention of the provision, then the bill must specifically provide for that. Further points out that the provision that the arrangement to pay the judgment debt should be made within 30-day period is unreasonable. Submit that this matter can be addressed if provision is made that the arrangement to pay the debt may be made beyond the 30-day period. They then point out that such a provision will be in line with Regulation 823 of the Treasury Regulations as made under the Public Finance Management Act. As far as section or sub-clause 6 is concerned, they indicate that whole process is a deviation from the normal procedures provided for in the Uniform Rules of Court and the Magistrates Court's rules. I have made copies of the, because both of them contains many rules dealing with execution of movable, immovable. I have made copies, I haven't studied them yet, just to see what exactly, how they think that sub-clause 6 is in conflict with the procedures or processes set out in the rules. Then the famous subclause 7 points out that it gives the state one more opportunity to stop the sale of state property in execution, and they support that provision. However, they indicate that the provision introduces problematic concepts such as direct and material interest, which is not part of our law and therefore subject to interpretation. They do not further indicate that the requirement of interest of justice is not supported as it is not part of our civil jurisprudence and remains open to interpretation by the courts. As far as the definition clause is concerned, or the proposed new definition clause, I'm unhappy that we inserted at the end of the bill. Now, I agree because that is not the standard practice, but our problem is that you can't, unless you renumber all the provisions, all the sections of the Act, you cannot insert a new one before section 1. The state will advise us and I had a long discussion on this issue. I agree, because I think the problem is now you read the Act, you see certain expressions, but you only, once you've gone through the whole Act, then you for the first time see what those expressions mean. So that's why definition clauses are always in front of Act, but in this case, we don't have any other option than to put it at the end, unless the committee feels that we should put it in front and then renumber all the sections of the existing Act, which I don't think will be an appropriate option to follow. Indicates that the word state should be defined to include local government. And the committees will see there are many commentators, and even I think Mr. Jeffrey raised the question, but what does the state mean? So there are some other commentators also who indicate that we need to define the word state for purposes of this Act. Then they expressed the view that the definition of final court order is problematic, as the definition, or as paragraph B of the definition, does not make provision for instances where matter is taken on review after judgment has been given. Expresses the view that, seeing that the definition does not make provision for such a process, it means that litigant may execute a judgment against the state even though the state has applied for the review of the proceedings. So again, it's something that we will have to look at. Then section 27, now this is the first time that I've heard or seen anything of this institution. So they only have changed the name.
Yeah.
Supports the bill subject to a few technical changes. Firstly, points out that section 3.1 seeks to ensure that the attachment and sale and execution of state assets is only given as a matter of last resort and only permitted against certain permitted subject to certain safeguards necessary to protect the public interest. They however point out that this may be undermined by seemingly inadvertent failure of the proposed new subsection 1 to expressly make reference to the process set out in subsections 6 and 7. Now sub clause 1 at the moment say subject to subsections 5 and 6. They want us to add subsections 6 and 7 as well. As far as clause 3, sub clause 3A is concerned, they express the view that the phrase "unless an appeal has been lodged" is unnecessary, as the proposed definition of final court order really makes it clear that finality will not have been reached if an appeal has been lodged. And then they propose that the words "all in accordance with the time frames as agreed to with the judgment creditor for the satisfaction of the judgment debt, as the case may be added to that paragraph," right at the end they added to it, "to ensure that the reference in the proposed new section 3.4 covers both the stipulated and agreed upon timelines. They have then also drafted an amendment, or proposed amendment, which forms part of the submission. I haven't quoted it here because the members can always go and have a look at the proposed amendment as included in their submission. As far as proposed clause 3.4 is concerned, points out that the text of the proposed new section 3.4 is confusing, as it only refers to the statutory timeline of 30 days and not making it clear that if upon agreement a department and a judgment creditor may agree to a time frame longer than 30 days. Express that in their view there appears to be no good reason why the law should preclude this option. Again, they proposed, or they have included a proposed amendment in their submission. As far as clause 3.7 is concerned, points out that while the text of the proposed new section appears particularly broad, its genesis as set out in Nyati 2 case, that it should be interpreted in accordance with that judgment, indicates that while there is no need for this detail to be included in the bill, it's important for Parliament and also this committee to be aware of that courts in interpreting the provision will be obliged to rely on the Constitutional Court's reasoning in the Nyati 2 case. It also has comments as far as the proposed new section 3.1 is concerned. Expressed the view that the expression state is significantly wider than the bodies than that the bill proposes will be subject to the application of the bill, namely departments. This inconsistency is confusing and could lead to situations where it is unclear whether bodies or entities that are not departments but are part of the state may have their movable property attached and sold in execution, even though they were not party to the initial litigation and court order. And they may indicate that such a party will then have to apply in terms of the proposed use clause 3.7. Points out that this confusing situation could frustrate legitimate creditor who will then be without a relatively quick and effective remedy as envisaged in the Nyati case. And it will also lead to an increase in legal costs. Proposes that this inconsistency should be resolved in favor of adoption of the wider term, which will be more consistent with the Constitutional Court's intention. So wider meaning not only limiting it to national and provincial departments. As far as clause 3, subclause 4 is concerned, it also points out that the bill only allows attachment of an execution against movable property and only property owned by the state and is used by the department concerned. Points out that although these limitations appear to be The bill provides for several further preconditions that have the effect of limiting the scope of an effective remedy for a lawful creditor. Dawson then also expresses the view that these further constraints are couched in broad and vague terms that are likely to be the subject of extensive and extended debate and litigation. The effect of this is to deny lawful creditors an available and effective remedy. As far as subclause 7 is concerned, Chairperson, it also expresses the view that the expression not in the interest of justice is broad and subject to interpretation, that the effect of this provision is to undermine the intention of the Constitutional Court to ensure a speedy resolution for plaintiffs whose earlier judicial remedies are rendered empty and worthless by inefficient and obstructive public servants or simply lengthy bureaucratic processes. expresses then the view that if the steps set out in sub clauses 3 to 6 have been taken, then the state must be obliged to accept execution without further delay. Then, the last proposal as far as subsection 7 is concerned, propose that in the event that the identified property is no longer available, the bill should allow the sheriff to identify similar or equivalent property. As far as the definition clause is concerned, points out that it is unclear why the bill only provides for the inclusion of provincial and national departments rather than all organs of state, as defined in section 239 of the Constitution. Suggest that in the absence of a clear explanation for not applying the bill to all organs of state, the committee should require such scope of application. Eskom's submission as far as section 3A is concerned proposes that paragraph should state that the appeal should not only be noted but also prosecuted within a stipulated time frame which a party can proceed to execute, failing which a party can proceed to execute. Means that the time period for prosecution of an appeal be inserted in the bill to ensure finality on the appeal process and thus avoiding an unnecessary delay, and that the applicant must take steps to prosecute the appeal within the time period specified in the bill. They propose an amendment which has been included in their submission. As far as paragraph 3b is concerned, expresses the view that the judgment creditor should not be restricted to secure the assets of a particular department to satisfy the judgment. They also then indicate, as far as 3b is concerned, that the provisions of the new section 3.4 is clear that the state owns the assets which is used by the department, and therefore the judgment creditor should be in a position to execute against any department or directly against National Treasury to recover the debt in the event it fails to successfully recover from the department due to the fact that it may not be possible to find sufficient assets to cover the judgment amount. So that again, this is now the second proposal as far as this issue is concerned. I was kind enough to prepare draft amendment for this committee's consideration. As far as subsection 3.4 is concerned, indicates that it's not clear who exercises the discretion to exclude the attachment and execution against property that would disrupt service delivery and all the other issues mentioned in the bill. Indicates that the exemption against attachment of property of the state and which is used by the department concerned should only be triggered if the service delivery ceases to operate at all, or the public or the state is put at risk as a result of the attachment of the property and the department property of the department concerned. Top of page 11, Eskom expresses the view that the limitation will restrict a creditor in obtaining an attachment and execution order against the national provincial department for debts selling in money, since the department concerned may be successful in claiming that all of its movable property sought to be attached is being used for service delivery. Again, they say that we must the same execution rules of the High Court and the lower courts should apply. Then the issue of immovable property. I indicate that the qualifications that we have set, that section of subclause 4 makes the attachment subject to, is vague because it doesn't spell out what type of assets or property is considered to disrupt service delivery, taken life or places security of the public at risk. It should be spelled out what property is exempted from such attachment. Again, they say that same rules must apply. Recommends that the same principles of the High Court and lower courts should apply for a sheriff when executing attachment of assets. I've mentioned to the committee that there are many rules dealing with the execution which I will make available and which we can then have a look at to see how we can, if necessary, bring those processes into the bill. They have made a proposal there as far as that is concerned. As far as subsection 37 is concerned, points out that it's not clear what is meant by in the interest of justice and proposes that it should be spelled out in the bill. They further recommends that as an alternative that the expression in the interest of justice be replaced with the expression public interest. And then lastly, I recommend that provision should be made for the judgment debtor to bring an application for the state, to bring an application to state execution proceedings on the grounds of the property attached in terms of the proposed new section 3.4 would disrupt service delivery, put the public at risk. I've again prepared a proposed amendment as far as that is concerned. See, Chairperson, I think we have only one more submission to go through. We'll see that many of the commentators raise the same kind of issues. There are different ones, but there are a few issues that come up in many of, or in various of these submissions. So it's not a matter that every commentator has his or her own ideas. There are some general concerns among the commentators. Now, the Law Society, unfortunately I haven't had the opportunity to summarize the comments of the Law Society as I've done with all the others, but what is contained in this document is the main issues raised by the Law Society. I will, during the course of this afternoon or tomorrow, also summarize Law Society and then make a copy of the complete document then available to the committee for the committee's convenience. Law Society is of the view that the word state in section 3.1 should not be replaced with the words organ of state, as the latter also includes local government. Therefore, it proposes that the word state should be defined to include any department of state or administration in the national government and in the provincial government. Again, the issue of the definition of state. They then is of the view that retrospective effect should be given to the bill. However, it may be possible that a judgment or order was not obtained against a nominal defendant or respondent. Provision must therefore be made that in such an event, execution may also be levied. I'd say, listen, I'm reading this because this is the exact words that Law Society have used, so might take some time, and in between that there may still be issues that are not relevant. That's why I said I will summarize and then make the new document available to the committee. What makes it difficult is that I'm not 100% sure always to which provision they refer, so if the committee will bear with me, let me just get the Law Society's comments. Then
Chair, to read it maybe to rescue Mr. De Lange, shouldn't we... Sorry? Mr. Labuschagne, sorry. Shouldn't we... I mean, if he hasn't been... I mean, we were meant to have the hearings today. Nobody wants to be heard. So in a sense, because usually the department, we all come and listen to the hearings, and then what Mr. Labuschagne is doing gets done later, and there's usually a written document. So just given that he hasn't then had a chance, and I also battled quite a bit with the Law Society submission. They refer to they want to know what happened to the Constitution 18th Amendment Bill. So I think they were looking at an earlier version, because I think, as the department would have said, there was consideration for a more drastic overhaul. Their submission also has, they end with saying, or the one that I've got, they've taken the liberty to draft its submissions in legislative format for your convenience. I trust you find this in order. That may be, but it's not here. So I don't know whether it got stuck in Parliament, or whether they just forgot to, they didn't submit. But really, Chair, what I'm saying is I think Mr. Labuschagne is battling a bit. Should we not allow him to, if he hasn't been able to properly follow the Law Society submissions, let's maybe come back to it.
Person, yeah, it will suit me like a glove if the committee decides not to proceed with Law Society at the moment. I may just add that they have attached to their submission is a whole proposed new section 3.1.03, as well as a definition clause, and even a short title.
Chair, look, we were given files, so it's not a question of, and in my file, unless I got the unlucky one, that submission is not there.
Just staff are required to photocopy hundreds of these documents, and inevitably something.
Yeah, I think only Mr. Labuschagne seems to have that submission. Mr. Romano doesn't. Smut says Mr. Labuschagne can keep it, but unfortunately, to point out to Ms. Smuts, we have to consider every submission made, and I'm quite outraged about the DA.
To our attention. Maybe Mr. Bonani Romano can get a copy from you and then we'll distribute it. But in any case, the committee's view is that you shouldn't proceed with the Law Society's submission for now, all right? And we'll come back to it.
I just want to point out that this is the submission which I received from the committee secretary.
Yes,
so he must have it. So somewhere, perhaps, something went wrong. And then the last commentator is the F.W. de Klerk Foundation. Supports the bill and expresses the view that the bill will definitely pass constitutional muster.
Why you just thinking?
I don't want to know.
Well, if we've got all the submissions, I don't see a submission for Mr. Hoffman. Have we missed something? When has he not made a submission to us?
Now let's say this. Mr. Advocate Paul Hoffman made some really good, I'm on the record. Advocate Hoffman made some absolutely admirable proposals when he made them at the time. I in fact praised him publicly for them, and perhaps some of them have found their way in here. Yes. No, Advocate Hoffman did some really good suggestions.
While Ms. Smuts is on the record, when you were praising him, that wasn't the time you referred to him as one man in a fax machine.
I suspect he may have been attached to something more than a fax machine at that point.
You've heard Mr. Lovskachny. Let's take questions for clarity, if there are any. Mr. Jeffrey?
Look, I see other members have got their hands up, but one clarity was the Denise Rates submission. I see that's addressed, that 7th of February, and addressed to the department. I mean, the department had its, as we see with the Muslim Marriages Bill, and we know has its own hearing process. Is this Denise Rates submission? I mean, it's very short, it's a page. Is it meant to be before us? Or did it somehow get submitted from the departmental hearing? That's sort of the one. The other then was, Chair, was a process point. So I don't know if you want me to raise the process point now.
Right.
Well, no, it was just that you know, I suppose, I think the problem is nobody wanted to come and speak to us on this. So I think we've then put Mr. Lovskachny a bit on the spot. Usually we have another version of this document which would have an additional column of the department's response. And that is then more, with respect to Mr. Lovskachny, more thought through than I think he was able to present now. So he has been put on the spot. So I think we need to have that. I don't know how long that would take him. It's not long. As you know, we are under pressure to finalise the bill so it can be assented to by the deadline set by the Constitutional Court. So maybe, I don't know how much more we can discuss now, and it would be a matter of, I think, Mr. Lovskachny saying when can he have this done by. We've got the Inyati judgments. It's a question of, do we need anything else as the committee in order to consider the bill, and then scheduling meetings to go through it and consider it.
We do agree with that, but we just each have one issue. And just to assist me, just please remind me, I know there's a good reason why local government... I know there's a good reason why local government isn't included, but will you remind me what it is? And to me, clearly what we are dealing with and ought to be dealing with are national and provincial departments. And I referred you once before to Section 238 of the Constitution, which may be of assistance. But would you just remind me why local government isn't included, and should it maybe be? Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just and just quick, also, when you're going to come back to us with your comments on particularly the issue of that raised by the Premier's office about the finance, that is a bit of a concern to me. Will you include in that some more detail as to what processes are possible? I mean, because what they said, it seems to imply that they would have to pass a separate piece of provincial legislation for every single incident. Is that so, or is it necessarily so, or, you know, just so that we know? Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. On page 4, 3B2, there is reference made to Provincial Revenue Fund. And later on, at the last sentence, there is reference made to an MEC, which means this Act is also going to deal with the provinces. The Public Finance Management Act, Act Number 1 of 1999, was made for national. So I think it is advisable that when we refer to it, when it's going to deal with provinces, we actually say Public Finance Management Act, Act Number 1 of 1999, as amended, so as to include the provinces, because before that, it had nothing to do with the province. It's only after it was amended by Act Number 29 of 1999.
I basically have two issues to address. First, that the most rights submission was submitted to me in person. I received that on the 2nd of last month. The bill at that stage was already introduced. So there was basically nothing that I could do about the comments. So I thought it appropriate to bring it to the attention of the committee, because it is after all comments that we have received on the bill. So I don't know whether the committee is obliged to look at it, but I did receive the comments, and that's why I submitted it to the committee.
Clarity. I noticed that it says, I'm quite shocked that Denace rates missed their deadlines, but be that as it may, but no, it was just clarity where it had come from. But I mean, it's short, it's easy to read, it's constructive, so let's consider it.
And then the last issue, Chairperson, is why is local government excluded? The Constitutional Court, when it made its order in August 2009. As part of its order, the Minister of Justice and Minister of Finance, as part of its order, it provided for a tailored execution process applicable to national, provincial government departments and local government. The Minister of Justice, Minister of Finance were then requested by the court to indicate why that interim order should not be made a final order. We did submit an affidavit, and then when the court came with its final order, it limited it to national and provincial departments. So that is in line with the court. And then I have also made available or sent to the committee secretary copies of the Municipal Finance Management Act, which provides for this kind of execution process as far as municipalities is concerned.
Chair, the previous bill that we published for comment did include municipalities and local government, but as a result of the comments we received, we decided to take it out. It should not be part, because they have their own process. And just then on the question of the comments of the Western Cape and the indication that every time money is paid that there should be a separate bill, these are the issues that we need to discuss with National Treasury, Department of Finance, because we're not very clear on that either. We will do so. We as Johannes indicated, we have given the documents and the comments, all the comments to them, So we will be meeting with them in the next week or so to clear these issues. And then the reference to the Public Finance Management Act, yes, we will have a look at that, whether we should include the words as amended. But as it is at the moment, the Act applies to national and provincial.
Just with Treasury, we may want to suggest that Treasury send somebody to sit in, and then maybe when we've gone through it and got clearer views on things, we may want a response on those. But I think it would be useful for Treasury to come. Yes, I think it would be useful for Treasury to come when we start deliberating. Let them send somebody with a watching brief sort of thing, and then I can foresee us wanting an input on particular issues.
I would really support that, Chair. We can.
Yeah, I think it's better for it, it. It's a request from the committee, so that if Treasury, because I don't know how enthusiastic Treasury are for the bill. I'm speculating. I don't know. But I think it's unfair to say to the officials they must get another department in. I think the committee must get. Timing then, is Mr. Labuschagne able to tell us now, or will we get told in due course? I've got no problem with being told in due course.
From our side, we've now received an indication that you need to finalize by the 20th of June. So that does not give us much time. We will really work very hard on this, and I will try to withdraw Johan from all the other work that he's got, which will be problematic, but we'll see what we can do. And let's say today is Wednesday. Chair, 2 weeks. Then we'll come with a full document with all our comments as requested by Mr. Jeffrey.
Yeah, look, I have a program in front of me. I mean, when Mr. Rudman says you have to complete by the 24th of June, I hope he's not referring to this committee, but rather to Parliament, because it's got to go to the NCOP too by that date. I would have thought that we're back for 2 weeks in April, and then we rise and effectively until the local government elections. I really think the sooner the better. So without sort of wanting to say 2 weeks is too short, I think it's very good that Mr. Labuschagne is withdrawn from everything else. And we need to prioritize this. Obviously, we've got to deal with the budget too, but we need to prioritize it. If we can pass it by the end of April, well and good. It's only four clauses, and it's only 7-9 submissions, of which one is just an acceptance. Just to stress that. Otherwise, we can. I'm sure. I don't know when if we don't meet the Inyati deadline. And somebody's got to go back to the Constitutional Court. We'll volunteer Mr. Rudman to.
May I ask you another thing? And I'm all in favour of doing this fast.
I just, Mr. Jeffrey, you weren't here, and we were told you were the Deputy President. But I informed the committee that I had received in my mail a letter from Mr. Frolic, the House Chair, informing me that the committee has by the week of the 20th of June this year to finalize the state liability bill, amendment bill. That is taking into consideration the Constitutional Court's ruling and its deadline, the NCOP process, and the House's consideration of the bill. So that's what he's done.
You know, the problem is, has he factored in the NCOP? This. So are they going to be happy to get to deal with the bill in a week?
Is therefore that the committee finalizes the bill by the week of the 20th of June 2011 in time for it to be scheduled for plenary and transmitted to the NCOP before the end of the second term. So he's factored in all that.
He hasn't. He wants it submitted to the NCOP before the end of the second term. When are the NCOP going to deal with it? They have to pass it before the end of the second term. They're going to be rising around the 24th, or I'm sure they're not going to be wanting to sit in July. This bill has to be assented to, I think it is, by the 1st of August. So with respect to Mr. Frolic, I unfortunately don't think he's considered the NCOP. Mm-hmm. And although it's a Section 75 bill, there is provincial, there's likely to be provincial interest in the bill. So hence I think that we may need to relook at the thing. I mean, the NCOP, I know, get very upset when the NA say to them, here's a bill, pass it in a week, which is effectively what we seem to be saying. So that's why I think maybe not to discuss it further in the meeting, but we may want to, you may want to discuss it further with the House Chair and ensure engagement with the NCOP so that there's agreement from them of when do they need it by. But we may find ourselves under pressure to pass the bill before we rise to the local government elections, or when we come back immediately afterwards. And remember that when we come back there will be EPCs, so it is a, I think there are some challenges coming up.
Chair, is it possible to get a bit of a vooruitskouwing of our program from here on? I always am grateful for the notices faithfully sent out by Bonani. Before the end of 1 week, I know what's happening by the next Tuesday, Wednesday. But it might be useful to have a slightly longer view to plan one's working life.
I had said to Bonani that him and I needed to sit down and look at that, just that, because the budgetary process is quite stressful. And it's only stressful because of the local government elections. But we do have priority legislation before us. Protection of personal information, I'm not sure how priority that is.
That I think we factor in when we can. It's okay. More, the technical committee still has to do some work, so it would be more ensuring you negotiate on our behalf with Mr. Burgess. To release Ms. Smuts and Mr. Ambrosini. And Mr. Landers, yeah. But that's also protection of state information is a priority. So I think personal can be, I've been looking at it in terms of by the end of June in plenary.
Okay.
But there's no outside deadlines for that. I think our deadlines are basically state liability and the budget.
Trafficking can also go after June?
Well, you know, there's general pressure from the public, but and I don't know how much more we've got to do. I missed the meetings, but you know, that would be nice, but I don't think there's any I don't know what's outstanding. Let me shut up.
Well, as far as possible, we'll do our best, Mr. Swart, but I think given the Constitutional Court's ruling, state liability then takes first prize, okay, it becomes number one, and for the reasons Mr. Jeffries put forward, then we should target before the elections. That's a huge ask, but okay, we'll look at that, because then, as I said, we have the budgetary process. So essentially that's our program.
Maybe we can do trafficking as then under third priority.
Yes, it is third. It's third. Yes, Honourable Stoller.
It's very clear, Chair, that we have got more work than days. And if that is the situation, we'll have to stretch our days a little bit by waking till maybe 11 o'clock at night. Yeah, and Fridays.
I was just going to say on
Ms. Shopisitole's point that I mean, Ms. Smuts complains about it, but we were able to cover a considerable amount of work with that technical committee on personal information by sitting in the evening. So obviously those members who don't have transport, we'd have to organize, ensure that there's transport organized. But you actually can do an enormous amount of work. Child justice, which was not a particularly nice bill, as far as being technical, we sat till 9, 10. Late, you know, so I think that it's possible. And I think that, look, given that we're now talking about meeting till late, I know Mr. Lovascachny is coughing, but I'm not sure why he needs 2 weeks. I would have thought even by next week. I mean, let the thing be worked out so that when he's finished, we're ready for it. But he's got it all in his head. He's just got to do the Law Commission, and then he's got to write it up.
It sounds so simple, but when you sit down and you start discussing and getting debating with people, then it's not so simple. Chair, now, all right, let's see what we can do. By the end of this week, we can perhaps report back to you, just to indicate what our views are when we can finish. But let's see whether we can do it within a week. It's always difficult to get hold of the people at National Treasury. It's not easy, because we have to sit with them, and we'll see what we can do and report back. And just by the way, when you look at your program long term, you must just bear in mind that we will be introducing a number of bills very shortly, dealing with a number of issues. So
we're aware of the bills that are in the pipeline, Mr. Rudman. The public protector's report, I understand, is now, according to the ATC's tabled, but what's going to happen to it, I can't tell you. I don't know if other members have information that could assist us, so I'd be speculating. Christine.
I understood that it had been referred to police.
I mean, usually public protectors' reports, this committee's never, I think, dealt with the public protector's report. I mean, we deal with the public protector's annual report and accountability. Usually there's an ad hoc or it goes to, I mean, in this case, it does impact on police, it does impact on public works. So I think the likelihood of us getting it on our own is limited.
And of course we ask for it, which we may wish to consider. I mean, the whole idea is the whole idea with the reports from people like this out to the Human Rights Commission, Public Protector, is that they get tabled in Parliament. We must obviously fat notici, and since we are the primary committee looking after those two, I think it would be appropriate that every time they do send something, we at least take a decision whether we too wish to deal with it or not. You remember what happened to Human Rights Commission? They do not only the constitutionally and statutorily required socioeconomic reports, which ought to be taken proper notice of by a multiplicity of committees, but they did a number of other reports, and I think Justice never had the time to formally acknowledge, a little bit discuss. So it's something that we should, in theory, you know, consider doing. I know we simply don't have the time. But this one, this report number 33, I think we should not exclude the possibility that let the police do it, let the public works do it, but let's not exclude the possibility that we too may wish to, at a later date, sit on it, especially when we've seen what consequences flow or do not flow. Just let's not exclude the possibility.
Sure that we're able or in a position to say to Parliament's management, listen here, we want this bill, we want this report. Well, all right, Honourable Sitole.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I don't think it's a question of options. I don't think so. the public protector falls under our jurisdiction. It is our responsibility. We may like to have other people helping us, but definitely speaking, that falls under our jurisdiction. And, you know, we must avoid a situation where we choose what we want to do. We have to do all the work that we have to do. The question now is to find a strategy how to get that work done. But if we are responsible for their annual reports and all, we are responsible for everything.
You'll be facing the Treasury. Well, honourable members, that's it. We're adjourned. Thank you very much.
Mr. Jeffrey, I'd just like to ask.
Yes. Yeah. Not party, but faction.
Yeah.
Other divisions who were not party.
Thank you for indulgence on that matter. I will send you an email. Thanks.
All right, look, we'll give them because we would.
Oh.